got another new book in front of me now, Birds of Ireland, A Field Guide, Second Edition. A superb practical guide, says Ireland's Wildlife by Jim Wilson, with photographs by Mark Carmody. And we can talk to our very own Jim Wilson from Cove now. Hello, Jim, and congratulations.
Thank you very much, Derek. Glad to be with you.
Tell us all about it, as they say.
Wow. Well, it was 11 years since the first edition was published. And as the listeners to the show will know for sure, that a lot has happened even in those 11 years. We've had reviews of our species of conservation concern, and things like the metapipit and the kestrel appear on the red list, which we were a little bit surprised at. But and also then we have birds starting to move their range further north with climate change, and we're getting some of the egrets, cattle egret, great white egrets, turning up with quite regularly now. And also from a lot of reviews and critiques of the first edition, people were looking for distribution maps. We did leave them out initially because we felt the island is so small that once you had the right habitat, you had a chance of seeing whatever was in the book. But so we've put in distribution maps into this one too. We've updated a lot of the stuff. Of course, there was no apps or anything back then, believe it or not, that were being used. So we had to include all that. And then, of course, Mark, who's I think is on the line, he was busy updating and adding new photographs to the plates.
Well, the photographs are absolutely fantastic. I must congratulate you, Mark. The one on the cover is of a kingfisher, one of my favourite birds. Where did you take that photograph?
Hi, Derek. Yeah, thanks very much. That photograph was taken in Bushy Park in Dublin. There was quite a regular spot there for kingfishers at one point, and I set up my hide there, taken under licence from the NPWS, and was lucky to get a nice bright day when that bird appeared in that branch.
Now, you better tell people about that licence from the NPWS, that's the National Parks and Wildlife Service. You can't just go out randomly photographing birds, particularly during the breeding season. So tell us a little bit about that. Give us an insight into how you get these pictures.
So I guess for breeding species in Ireland, you do need a licence from the NPWS to photograph birds at or near their nest site. And usually with these licences, they give you a distance within which you cannot encroach. And of course, if you are trying to photograph birds at the breeding sites, any kind of disturbance or uncomfortableness that you might note with the species you're trying to photograph, you should immediately retreat and leave the birds doing what they are intended to do. So you do need to be very careful about how you photograph and what you photograph during the breeding season. Of course, outside of the breeding season and on the wintering grounds, you also do need to take care of how you photograph birds, particularly waders who are, roosting at high tide. They're trying to conserve energy and build up fat reserves over winter so they can migrate in spring back to their wintering grounds in the Arctic.
You've got to be very patient, though, as a photographer. You've got to wait until you catch that moment, because I've taken lots of pictures of lots of things and it's never right. I was trying to take a photograph of a magpie this morning, and as I got closer, it turned around on the branch. It had its side to me. I couldn't get the full magpie. It's not as easy as people think.
No, you do need a degree and a level of patience, I guess. I probably have more patience for birds than I do for people, and people will tell you that about me. But you do need to sit and wait, and you do need to take your time, and you do need to have the patience and wait until the bird either turns or, acts in a particular behavior way you want to capture, and just have just be patient. It will happen. It might take 2 minutes, could take 2 days, could take 2 weeks, but if you have enough patience, you'll get rewarded.
But you also know your birds. You really do understand the subject matter.
It is important to understand how birds behave, and I think fieldcraft is hugely important. I guess I was fortunate that I've been birdwatching for most of my life, and I was a birdwatcher before I turned my hand to bird photography. So having birdwatched for many, many years and been in the field quite a lot, and helping people, doing some survey work, and also just out birdwatching as a hobby, you do learn the kind of habits and the traits of particular species. So it does help you enormously then when you're trying to photograph them, because you have an understanding of how they behave, how they will behave, and also you're able to read signs. If you're disturbing them, or if they're about to, feed or dive. And particularly with bird calls, if you can identify the alarm calls of birds from being out birdwatching, then you might be able to anticipate a behaviour, like say a bird of prey might be coming in and blue tits make a particular call when a sparrowhawk is close by. So all those kind of things do help you having that extra field craft when you're trying to photograph birds.
Well, it shows in the book, it really does. Thank you, Mark. Jim, as you know, this programme panel is stuffed full of bird lovers. Richard Collins at home in Malahide. Richard, you've had a look at this second edition.
Yes, Derek and Jim, I am. It is an extraordinary achievement, I must say. I'm green with envy that when I started birdwatching all those decades ago, I have to say, there wasn't a book like that available at that time. This book is superb. The great division, it seems to me, opening a bird book trying to identify something, is that some of the birds are extremely rare. They're vagrants or whatever. You're most unlikely to see them. Others are extremely common. I notice when people starting out, they often come up with statements that they have seen, oh, this extraordinary Siberian rock thrush or something in their garden, and that sort of thing. Whereas this book deals with that very well. It, in two ways, it divides the birds up into those that are common, and it has a list then of the rarer ones, and it doesn't ignore the unfortunate birds that shouldn't be here, the escapes and introductions. And it includes those, and they are important. They are birds too. It's very Catholic in its way. It accepts everyone. Now, it seems to me the great problem, Jim and Mark, is with this kind of book is that we now realise how perishable things are, how change is going rapidly. It's 11 years since you produced the first one. I would like to ask you, how big a change, how many of the birds did you have to radically change? How many of them did you have to radically revise with this book?
A very good question, Richard. I mean, as you can see from the latest Birds of Conservation Concern 2020-2026 that was released by Birdwatch Ireland, you know, birds have started to appear on it that weren't there 11 years ago. I've already mentioned the meadow pipit and the kestrel, to name but two. And what we really have had to do, the main additions, it's more additions than subtractions in some respects, because thankfully, while those species and ones like it have become rarer, we are getting additional species. None of them have become extinct, but we are getting additional species that are coming in. So we've put in more images of the cattle egret and the great white egret in particular. I mean, the buzzard obviously wouldn't have been, you know, there as a regular Irish bird when we were growing up. And now it's a standard part of the text. As an identification guide, thankfully, they haven't changed colour or shape. So I didn't have to alter that part of the text much. But in the introduction and at the end, the conservation end, that's where we had to do a lot of changes to reflect birds as they are now. And of course, as years go on, that will keep changing. And that's the problem, if you could call it that, with a guide, is that as soon as you've printed it, things keep changing. Nature never stays the same. But we were happy enough that the main parts of it were there. Mark was quite modest. There was a lot of birds that you couldn't get good flight shots of. And a lot of people only see birds when they're in flight, but especially the smaller ones like the little finches and stuff like that. But with the new technology and with the sort of camera gear that Mark has, we've been able to get our source some really nice flight shots to add to the plates to make them even better than they would have been before. So what we're really doing is giving people the tools to learn to identify what they're looking at, and then in the other section of the book, telling them, you know, what we need to do conservation wise, what you can do at a local, national, and international level to just look, hold on to what we've got.
And I love the distribution maps that you've included this time. Most guidebooks have just summer and winter sort of thing, and maybe a text which says also seen on passage or something like that. But this is very comprehensive. It separates the sea, the birds you see around the coast. And it even has a category called not usually seen, which is a polite way of saying You haven't seen that bird that you think you've seen. At least that's how I read it.
Yes,
and that,
yes.
That's a very, very good feature to put in, I must say. And also, it's not just a field guide. Field guides are traditionally kind of arid. They only tell you about how to find it, how to identify it when you do find the bird. But this thing gives information as well. It's got little chapters, sections on each of the categories, telling you a bit about them, a bit of background, which is very important. It enriches the subject. I must congratulate you. It's a wonderful book that the pair of you have produced.
Thank you very much, Richard. Thank you.
Jim and Mark, it's a remarkable achievement. I was a big fan already of your first edition, and this is an improvement again upon that. As you were saying, Jim, nothing stays the same. Birds change, and bird populations change because of things like climate change and habitat changes. So it's obviously really important that these books are updated periodically, and I think you've done a fantastic job here. I think that, you know, obviously the first thing that will jump out when people look at it is Mark's superb photographs. I love the way that there are so many pertinent photographs for each of the species, and I know that getting those flight shots in particular can't have been easy, and it really adds to a guide like this. There's often a discussion, a debate between amongst birdwatchers, do you prefer an illustrated field guide or a photographic field guide? To my mind, this is the best of both worlds because the photographs have been so carefully and magically selected that you're seeing all the different poses, the different plumages. I think that's really, really great. But I think that what might not be so immediately obvious, but which I find really impressive, is the wonderful economy of the text that you've used, Jim. I know how hard it is to write succinctly about the birds and convey the information you want and still allow enough room for the photographs. You've done a really superb job of that, I have to say. Exactly the right amount of information to convey what you want and to enhance and supplement those photographs. That can't have been easy, though. Tell me a bit more about the challenge of that.
Oh, God. It's like doing a puzzle, you know, or is it the haiku poems, you know?
Yes, and sweet, yeah.
Yeah, you've only got so much. To keep it as a pocket guide, as you rightly say, Niall, there's no room for padding or waffle. You have to be distilled down to the bare minimum number of words, and that was quite a challenge. Now, I did have help from my good wife Anne, who's an academic and has done her PhD and supervises masters, so she actually magically transformed some of my very long sentences into like three words, which was really, really fantastic. But yes, that's the challenge with an identification guide, as opposed to one where, you know, you can expound about your thoughts in whatever language you want. This, you want the person to be able to get to the key features as quickly as possible, because generally they're either looking at it, the bird that they think they've seen, or they have just seen it. So you can't afford to be, you know, quick, let me get to the bit about the legs or the wings or whatever. So yeah, that was quite a challenge to keep also the book as a pocket size, something that you could bring in the field and not need a little carrier with wheels on it, you know, being so big. And so all those challenges meant with all the text, not even just the identification sections that go with each of the identification photographs and plates, but all the other text had to be kept nice and tight and to the point. And of course, we were very lucky to be able to get Birdwatch Ireland on board in endorsing it, and we of course then give Birdwatch Ireland the deserved plug that they should get on any publication to do with birds. So that was fantastic.
It's a great book, I have to say. And I'm looking at the maps. I was always very fond of distribution maps, having cut my teeth in the Biological Record Centre. Mm-hmm. And I'm just looking here at the gulls. Now, gulls that we see inland are the black-headed gulls. And there's your black-headed gulls. And you have the areas all at centre of the country. And that's where they are. Fine. But then when you go over to the herring gulls, which is supposed to be around the coast, nobody told it. But we look at the herring gull map that you have there. And the herring gulls are all over the place. I mean, it's great because they are all found inland. And not only that, but the great black-back gull, there's lashings of those inland as well. Yeah. And this is reflected in your map. So when people say they've found a gull inland, the old days you just said, oh, that had to be a black-headed gull. But your books make it very clear that these stories of herring gulls taking up nesting sites on people's houses, your map reflects this and reflects it very well. So you had to get all these distribution records as well to make these maps helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, thankfully, we, you know, an army of volunteer bird watchers over the decades have been going out every now and again and recording every bird they could see over the full 365 days of the year, and then collating all those records into nice distribution maps. And what I've basically done is taken all the distribution maps I could find. The last atlas, I think, finished in 2011. And as we've already been saying about things not staying the same, I'm sure the maps, if they were done today, would not be the same as they were 11 years ago. I would guarantee you that. But I also then looked for, since then, there was like, you know, surveys to do with certain groups of birds or individuals like the curlew, which we all know now from listening to the program Mooney Goes Wild, that is in serious trouble. So I was able to use that data as well to try and come up with as best a map as I could. It's not meant to be pin accurate, just because there isn't a breeding dot where you live and you're looking at one in the nest. It's just a general guide, because in the original edition, I was in favour of not putting it in, as I may have mentioned already, based on the idea that, you know, it's a small island. And if you've got the right habitat, there's a reasonable chance you might see birds that are found in that habitat. But so many people afterwards, and maybe it's people visiting the country as well, because we looked at like Amazon US, Amazon UK, Amazon Europe, and other online areas that sell books, and they all leave reviews, and we read through all the reviews, and one of the things that kept coming up was, we'd like a distribution map. So we put in the caveat that it's a very general guide, but you're dead right, Aina. It's lovely to actually just look at the patterns of colour, because we put in different colours for different times of the year, whether they're breeding, non-breeding or absent or whatever. And you'd be amazed when you sit down and just look at the maps, you can see the patterns of where they like to be. Some of them are in the east of the country, not in the west. Some are all over the place. And I think it turned out to be a nice addition. But again, a lot of work in translating all those maps into something that, you know, would be useful for the user.
Well, it is very useful. It's called Birds of Ireland, a Field Guide, second edition. Jim Wilson, with photographs by Mark Carmody.